Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show this evening here at WEAA 88.9 FM at Morgan State University, right here in Baltimore. We're having a little connectivity problem, so we may not be out there in the rest of the world, but we're here in Baltimore tonight, and you can join us here 410-319-8888. All right, just here, steinershow at gmail.com. We're going to look at the digital world in terms of what it is doing to us, what it may be doing to us, what we're not thinking about. We had a great debate here not long ago on this program about advertisers on the web and Facebook and how much they can track what we see so they can sell to us. Is that an invasion of our privacy? Is it the nature of business in the good old American way? Is it something we need to watch out for? There is now a new FCC push for net neutrality. We'll talk a bit about that. We'll talk about surveillance. There was an interesting video that some of us saw, I guess, that CNN had about the body scanners in airports and where that is taking us and where this new digital technology can walk through and they can get through your clothing as if they were remember the Superman movies? Can see right through your clothes? Well, that's what this machine does and sees what's on your body. Are we in danger of having our rights violated, or is this just where the world is going? We're joined in studio by Linda Schenk, who is a social media consultant, web designer, founder of Social Media Works and Circle Design and Development. I will say that, for disclosure, that Linda designed our website and does work with us, so that's not why she's here, but just to let you know that. Myrna Norton is with us. She's CEO of Community Analytics. Good to have you in the studio. And Mike Sobelski, who is programmer and entrepreneur and organizer of Ignite Baltimore. Good to have you. 410-319-8888. So does any of this give you all room for pause where this is taking us, where this digital world? Every time I turn around, you know, it was the other night we were driving and you have this little GPS on your phone, right? And I hit the GPS and asked it to take me where I wanted to go. And I already knew how to get there, so I had no idea why I asked. The stupid thing would tell me where to go. But I did anyway. But just the idea that you can actually be traced through your cell phone, if they wanted to, whoever they are, to trace you to see where you're going. Do you worry, since you three are in this world all the time, that we are in danger of losing our privacy and our individuality and all this?
I use a lot of those same services. I occasionally have that fear cross my mind, but I guess it's, in my mind, things are so much more convenient than they used to be. It's so enriching to my life that I accept the trade-off.
What is enriching to your life?
Take for example something like Twitter. Since I'm sure we'll be talking about social media, ability to form have these many more relationships with people online than I could have if I just confine myself to offline and untrackable interactions. That'd be one example. I have so many more friends now. I mean, they're not the same as in-person friends, but
they aren't.
But there's still people that I exchange ideas with that are part of my greater circle.
Okay. I have a question about that. Linda?
Well, I think my world has actually expanded a lot from having met people online and then having them be in-friend persons. In fact, that's actually, Mark, how I got connected to you through your old producer and I met online.
Jessica.
Yes, right. Jess and I met online, met in real life, and then I got connected to you. So That's true, isn't it?
That is true.
It's definitely helped my life. But I think the fear factor doesn't really come into my mind all that much. I am very careful about what I share. But I guess in the case of, you know, having a cell phone and having people be able to track me, you know, I sometimes think of, in case of emergency, that would actually might be a good thing, that somebody could find me and locate me if necessary. Not that I I'm going to be in a lot of danger, but but that would be a positive benefit of having that trackability.
Myra?
Well, I think, as with any enabling technology, there is a trade-off. So the more we advance technologically, the more good we can do, and on the flip side of that, the more evil, if you will, is possible. So I don't think you can have one without the other, and this is the way the world is going. And so the question is, how do we behave as a result of what this new world means? To me, that's the more important question. Is the truth is you know, the technology exists that you can be tracked and you can be, we were talking just before the show about you can be mimicked. You can, you know, someone can take your identity and not just in terms of, you know, for financial gain, but online, on the internet, and can assume that identity. Those things can happen. So given that we know they can happen, how do we behave as a result? How do we think about?
It's interesting. I mean, I have in the use of this new world, and I'm on it all the time now. I mean, we stream the show live on the internet. We have soon we'll have apps on the cell phone, so you use it to kind of spread your message. We're on Facebook. We have thousands of friends on Facebook. We're trying to transfer to that like page so people can continue growing with us that you've been bugging us about for a long time, Linda. But what we're doing. But on the other hand, when you say you have to take the danger of losing privacy and self, maybe that's not exactly what you said, but with this rising technology, I'm not so sure a lot of us are very comfortable with that. I mean, we're increasingly living in a place where they not only scan your body at airports, but they watch all the moves you're making wherever you're walking, that you can be traced through your cell phone, and that when I tie that to my own paranoid mind sometimes, to the corporatization of America, I get very uncomfortable. This is, on the one hand, we'll talk about how this is a freeing technology, but that side of it, to me, is something that you have to be wary of and that you have to really think about how you design a system in society that protects us from that. And I think the opposite is happening.
The problem is things are changing so quickly. So many industries are being disrupted our biology doesn't evolve quickly enough to keep up with the things that are happening in our society right now. So I'm sure there are these reasonable lines that we can draw where you don't have to be a hermit and you don't have to stop flying on airplanes, but still feel like you're an independent person in this republic. But we're living in a revolution right now.
Yeah, and you know, Mark, to your point, that's when I say I think we need to focus on how we behave differently, it's to address that very issue that this is the reality. So to you know, what are your choices? Well, you live as a hermit and you have no technology, and
Right. That's
probably not a viable option for very many people. On the flip side, you know, on the other extreme, you just don't pay attention to this. You don't think about it. You just do what you want to do. Go through your life in the digital world and don't think about the consequences of, you know, what it means that a corporation can track your eyeballs on a website and be able to then sell you more goods. So the question for me is, all right, what things are harmless and what things are harmful, and then how do we as a society protect people who have a solid understanding of this, and more important to me, many people who have no idea that this capability exists. So it's a question of, you know, education and then deciding how we're going to live in the digital world.
I did think of one answer to what you just posed. This is something I've come across in my travels online. I don't know if there's any one particular company that's working on this, but it's an idea that's floating around the internet. If we accept that it probably is a given that the companies are tracking you and they're using behavioral targeting to show you ads that are more likely to make you buy things, and that's not entirely a bad thing, it's not entirely a good thing either. So if we do decide that that's a given, maybe the answer is to is for the user to sell their data in some way, your data is going to be given out either way. Maybe you should be able to benefit more directly from it. Maybe it's just something like it could be something simple as you getting a discount for some of the things that you're buying. I mean, it could be something more tangible than that.
Well, let me take the other side here. I mean, I would say it's a terrible thing. I would say perhaps we should ban companies from being able to do that on the web, tracking what we do, tracking what we buy, tracking what we see, tracking what we look up, tracking what we research. That's none of your business. That if you want to sell to me the old-fashioned way. Come find me. Put up a billboard. I mean, it make me want to come to you instead of you coming to me and knowing everything there is about me to know. I mean, I think that that's, to me, makes me feel like I'm losing some of my individuality, some of who I am, that they can own me because I'm on the web, because I'm using this.
But aren't we using a free web? I mean, there's no cost for Google and Facebook. And we are, well, there's a cost because we're obviously paying for it with our information. But I actually spoke at Morgan one time and asked the students there how many people were going to be willing to pay for Facebook. And everybody in the room raised their hand and said, well, they said that they would not pay for Facebook.
Would not pay for Facebook, right?
Right.
There was a revolt when they tried to do that.
Exactly.
Right.
And people are really upset about that. But at the same time, people are upset about their privacy. But you can't have it both ways. So I think that if you pay for a service, such as you can pay for an email through, I think it's Mac.com, there's a more of an expectation of privacy with that because it's a paid service than if you're using something like Gmail or even maybe even the new Facebook messaging system.
I would kind of turn this and look at it from a different angle. So you don't want, you know, companies knowing you so well and you want them to come find you, but I would argue that we live in a world where we are overloaded with information. We every day in the mail, I'm shocked I still get mail, but I get, you know, so much junk mail. There are lots of billboards that are many of them, you know, falling apart, decrepit, etc. Might there be good in having a company understand me better and therefore make better products, provide better services, put information in front of me that is what I need at that moment, as opposed to blanketing everyone, which is what marketing has done for years and years. We're just going to mass market. And so whether you want to see this or not, you're going to get it. I'm not saying that companies are necessarily doing things in that altruistic way, but there is an opportunity there. And something
we're living in a world where almost all of our more and more of our purchases are online, where the books that you read will increasingly be digitized, so they're on a Nook or they're on an iPad or they're on the, what's the other one called?
Kindle,
thank you. Or it's one of those three, none of which I have yet.
Or your phone, for that matter. Your Droid, your iPhone.
Or this phone.
Yes.
So we're being forced to give ourselves up. It's not as if you have a choice in the matter.
Well, you can still go and buy a book.
Now,
or you can still buy a paper newspaper. But I don't necessarily. Well, that's another conversation about whether they'll always go. If newspapers and books will go away, but
we're being forced to the extent that if you want to be a modern person, I mean, you don't want to be like a Unabomber in a cave somewhere. You are going to be involved.
You can't find a telephone book, and you can't find a payphone. So if you want to talk to anybody and you're not at home, or if you want to find a number of somebody even if you are at home, you have to dial this 411 thing that is now outsourced to India or somewhere in another place that doesn't know how to say the word Towson.
And
Towson. and or spell anything in the city streets that you live in anymore. But when you do that, well, they know who you call. They know what you're pinpointing, and then they know how to pinpoint you. So it seems this is a generation gap here. Or am I the only one bothered by these things? Our listeners, are you bothered by these things? 410-319-8888. Perhaps you say it's a good thing. I mean, there's many people in this listening audience who are in their 20s, who are in their 30s. This is what you grow up with. This is who you are. This is part of your existence. And those of us who are being... I wasn't kicking and screaming into this existence because I bought the very first Mac that existed when it was out there. I was right there. They made it. 1986 was that? I bought it. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I want to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, how do you use the web? What do you think about advertisers knowing what you look at? Maybe that you do like that. Maybe you like the fact that you can get on the web and all of a sudden it pops up and goes whatever it goes. Swimming suits or whatever it is that you seem to look at. 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts? We're joined in studio by Linda Shank, who is the founder of Social Media Works, and Circel Design and Development. She's a social media consultant. Myra Norton, CEO of Community Analytics. And Mike Sabelski, who is the organizer of Ignite Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Tons of folks calling. I'm going to get your thoughts about where you think this is taking us. So is this a generation? Is it just me? Because I think I have three like-minded people in the studio here. Or similar, anyway.
I'd like to hear what the callers say.
I do, too. As soon as they clear one, we're going to clear by meaning they say it's okay. Ah, someone's there. Mike in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, folks.
Good evening.
First of all, I want to make a confession before I talk about the substance.
Don't make it too personal.
The spirit moves me, and I'm going to speak from my heart.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm not in my 20s.
Go ahead.
I don't want any of you to think you're talking to some guy in his 20s. Now that we got that straight,
okay.
I think this business, frankly, that I hear Mark expressing primarily, remember how good the old days were? I gotta say something about the old days because I was there too. I remember them, and they weren't that good. Number one. Number two. And this is really the main point, is that society, on the basis of electronics and computers, is in a social revolution, whether you like it or not. Now, we have to address how society is going to change, presumably consciously, to conform to the new situation. We can't go back to the steam engine. We can't go back to the absence of computers. So-called physical science, natural science as an example, the role of computers and electronics has changed the way science operates. I just want to read, this thing was written by three mathematicians about the role of computers.
Go ahead.
It says, fractals and modern chaos theory are also linked by the fact that many of the contemporary pace-setting discoveries in their fields were only possible using computers. It is already clear that the history of the sciences has been enriched by an indispensable chapter. Only superficially is the issue one of beautiful pictures or of perils of deterministic laws. In essence, chaos theory and fractal geometry radically question our understanding of equilibrium and therefore encompass an edge of the true of nature for the first time.
Okay, so in a very simple way, what does that say to you or say to us?
What it says to us is that society, on the basis of this technological revolution, is changing, and how do we reorganize ourselves consciously to utilize the change? I mean, these guys could always spy on us. Now they spy using electronics. Maybe we have to curtail their capability to run the show in the first place.
Well, that's, you and I may agree on that one.
Well, maybe we do, maybe we don't.
But
the main thing is that's the challenge that the electronic revolution is putting before us.
Well,
whether you like it or not, it's what we can do about it.
Okay, all right. Well, let's say it's here, and it's not going backwards. It's only going to go forwards. So you're igniting Baltimore. What do you think about what he said?
Well, that quote that he read was just like you asked me, how is it enriching my life? Well, he just read a quote about how these technologies are enriching the lives of mathematicians, people studying chaos theory. What I've been thinking about is, why are we coming off as sort of blasé about these privacy issues? And I guess I feel naive in saying this, but maybe it's because I generally don't have a lot to hide, and I'm careful. The things that I do want to hide, I don't put on the internet. It might be different if we were talking with somebody who was an activist in China or something like that, somebody who has been using the internet to do their work and has been really exploited because of it.
Any other thoughts before we go back to the phones?
I'd like to hear what the next person has.
Okay, I have some thoughts about that too, but I'm worried about activists in America, not just in China. Yeah. You know, I think there's some issues there with that here as well,
One thing I would say to the callers, and just for the record, I'm a mathematician by training, so I actually really appreciated that quote. And I think it's very true. The mathematical sciences, same thing for physics and many of the hard sciences. We have learned so much more about the world we live in. I mean, the acceleration of knowledge about our world and about us as human beings is due to the advancement of technology. We could not know what we know now without that. And so there's a lot of good in that. And the question is, how do we continue to point that, because it's only accelerating faster. So how do we continue to point that power in the right direction?
And I think I want to come back to that issue and what Mike raised and how this thing works. Let's go back to the phone and see what other issues are being raised by our listeners at 410-319-8888. You can also write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I say Gmail. I did, didn't I? Tamara, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have two short points. The first point I want to make is I agree with your panelists. Good and evil and everything, and although I don't want to be tracked on my cell phone, I do appreciate that my 16-year-old can be, so I know where he's going and where he's been, and he can call me in emergency, and I can get in touch with him any time of day. But on the other hand, you mentioned earlier about people not wanting to pay for Facebook. And I'm proud to say I'm 41 years old. I'm not, 20. And if I had that option, I would pay for it so that I could have my privacy. I'm actually very concerned that I think we're becoming immune to the privacy that we should have as just a natural right. I don't think it's one thing to get circulars in the mail. You can throw those out. Or it's one thing to have a telemarketer call you that you don't want to be bothered with. You cannot answer the phone. But I think as far as, we have our children on the Internet. Do we want people tracking everything our children are doing? I don't have a Facebook account. My husband does. We are kind of at a different opinion on that. And I've always felt that. I always say, well, if someone wants to find me, they'll find me. I don't need a Facebook account. And as a matter of fact, I had a girlfriend who lost touch with me about, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And so she actually found me through Facebook, but it wasn't my Facebook account. She found my stepmother on Facebook. And she said, I think you're my friend's stepmother. Can you give her my number?
You can't escape.
She found a way to find me. It was on Facebook, but it wasn't my account. And so I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Tamara, thank you so much. And just a quick question to the three of you. I wonder, I don't know, I clearly came out way before the era of Facebook. And actually, most of you guys did too. You had friends before Facebook came into it, obviously. But I mean, a couple of things. On the positive end of that technology, that new digital system, I've met people throughout the globe who are doing really fascinating things in the artistic and cultural and political world, and the combination of those worlds that I would not have met otherwise. During the Iranian Revolution, I started connecting with people in Iran, in Palestine and Israel. I started connecting people who were Palestinian artists and activists I would never have known, who were connecting with Israeli artists and activists and the theater they were doing. And that it was all there on the web, all there on Facebook. So that was fascinating. On the other hand, I see how they utilize and sell information, and that just yesterday the FBI just met with Facebook to figure out, and Google, how to use their systems to be able to track people they want to track. And so what I'm doing here, folks, you can't see me. I'm being like a scale. My hands are going back and forth. And so we're not streaming tonight. If you saw us on the web, you can see me doing this, but you can't see it right now. You'll see it again on Monday. To me, it's very promising, but very troubling.
Well, I feel like there's some good news in all of this. The technologies that we're talking about are they're disintermediating the world. They're upsetting all kinds of hierarchies and making the world flatter and everything like that. So although we've been talking about all the advantages that are accruing to big companies, there's nothing that stops individuals from building tools to counter some of these things. So, for example, the Falun Gong movement, sort of the expatriates of Falun Gong out in the world have built a pretty elaborate system to circumvent the Great Firewall. It's called the Great Firewall in China, so that Falun Gong activists inside of China can communicate and get the word out about what's happening to them. So, I mean, there's plenty of examples on the other side, like the Iranian Revolution, other things that you talked about.
That's true, except that the part of the issue here, as I go back to the phones on this one, is that part of the battle going on in Washington, D.C. now has to do with who controls this. I mean, it's true. I mean, this has the digital world has, in some senses, flattened the world, made a more democratic process in a visceral human way, not to say a political way. But that could all change depending on how it's managed and used and what rights we have to use it or not to use it. I mean, that's a real battle, I think, over how this thing, whether it continues to be that or it's something else.
Well, it's flattened the world, but paradoxically, at the same time, it's created more choke points where these kinds of activities can happen. Like, if we're all using Google to do our searches, or for all intents and purposes, we all are, that creates an odd sort of choke point. Or if we're all doing if our social graph is completely loaded into Facebook, that means Facebook becomes a gatekeeper or a choke point. And it sounds like, but with this the net neutrality stuff, then the service provider, the internet service provider, becomes another choke point.
And Facebook's not shy about using their choke points.
No, we call that, they're like a walled garden. That's the internet. That's the term of art
walled
for
garden.
That.
So, folks, we're going to take a very quick break. Anthony, we're going to come right back to your call. Sinclair, you're next, so please don't go away. 410-319-8888, Anthony, then Sinclair. Our next two callers up as we go this break. I want you to know that support for WEAA is provided by Baltimore for Healthy Babies. Far too many babies in Baltimore City die before their first birthdays because they are not sleeping safe. Your baby should always sleep safe, alone on their back, in a crib. More information on how to help your baby sleep safe, healthybabiesbaltimore.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. As we look at the world of digital technology and the digital world that's all around us and the questions of freedom, democracy, privacy, but also growth and where this is taking us, clearly it's here. It is not going anywhere but to continue to develop. We are joined in studio by Mike Sabelski, who is a programmer, an entrepreneur, and organizer of Ignite Baltimore, which has really taken off in this town as it has across the country, but really taken off here. Myra Norton is CEO of Community Analytics. Linda Shank is a social media consultant, web designer, founder of Social Media Works and Circel Design and Development. And as a way of transparency and as a disclaimer, Linda designed a website and does a lot of work with us on the web for our company, Center for Emerging Media. So, which is not why she's on the show, is because she's one of the experts we use from time to time, among other people. She's not always on the show. 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And I promise to go right to the phones, and I will. Anthony, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mark, for accepting my call tonight.
Thanks for calling.
I think there are some real pros and cons of this digital world of technology. I don't have texting for my phone. I'm kind of like living in the dark ages here. I don't have a Facebook account, although my wife and my daughter has one.
Uh-huh. Why don't you have one?
I refuse to buy into this whole thing of, you need to be on Facebook. Someone needs to find you. You need to reach other people. I just like the old way of doing things.
Uh-huh.
If I want to talk to you, I call you. I hate typing, so I'm not going to be texting and typing and all of this stuff just to talk to somebody. I think it's faster just to call them and say whatever it is I want to say.
Right.
You know, call me old-fashioned. But, you know, just a couple comments I wanted to make that, you know, the moment we accepted this technology, privacy went out of the window. I don't think you can have it both ways. Once we accepted this type of technology, you have no privacy. People talking about privacy, I don't understand that. There is no more privacy. I mean, they know everything you do, from a cell phone, having a being from a satellite, to where you live, it's all on a satellite, even to some things that I think are in our homes that I believe that the government is constantly listening. And because this whole fear of terrorism and all, it's just no more privacy. Forget that. It's out of the window. I mean, years ago when I was in the dating world,
When you're in the what?
Dating.
Oh, okay, dating world. I'm sorry. We got you. Okay. Uh-huh.
And we had pagers. Someone would page you. You would have to call them back. Now, before the cell phone age, I mean, you would have to get to a phone, either a phone booth or back to your home, to call the person. Now we have a cell phone on our hip, and it's like a cowbell on your neck, in my opinion.
And you can't be nervous and call and hang up because they're going to know who you are anyway.
Well, they keep calling. You don't answer. It's like, I called you five times. Why? Sir. Well, either I didn't want to talk to you, or I didn't think it was important. So, I'll call you later. So, me, And I think that at some point, it's going to become so bad that people are going to wish we didn't have it. That's all I wanted to say. Have a great night.
Thank you so much.
It's pretty stark. I was kind of curious to know that since if he had given up all that stuff, or I guess never picked it up in the first place, does that make life? What is life like that? Does he feel curmudgeonly, or I guess he doesn't think he's missing anything.
And how do you draw the line on that? Are you still using a rotary phone? I mean, because people can track your phone calls that you're making on a cordless phone on a landline. They can overhear that.
Or Easy Pass. That's one we haven't talked about Easy Pass yet. But it seems like every now and then you read in the paper, somebody got convicted of murder and they had the perfect alibi, except you looked at their Easy Pass records and they made it across the bridge. Of course, that's a good use of technology.
Well, I think Anthony's still there. You want to respond to that, Anthony?
Yes. I mean, some of these things. Some things you don't have a choice. I mean, the rotary phones, you can't even find one. So, I mean, if I had to use a rotary phone, I would use it. But you can't even find some of these things. So we're like forced to accept them. You know, cell phones is like the thing of today.
Do you have one?
If you don't have a cell phone, you're probably not going to be able to communicate with many people, being outside of your home.
That's right. True. I mean, go ahead, Anthony. Finish that thought, then we'll go to the next caller. Okay, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Like when I was a kid, and you were being bullied by one or two kids at school. Now, because of the internet, people can have sending you messages on Facebook or whatever thing you're on by email or whatever. You know, constantly badgering you. That didn't happen back in the day when I was in school. Everybody had a bully. There was a bully even when I was in grade school.
Okay.
But when I left school, I could go home and I would be rid of that until the next day.
Anthony, I think that these are some of the things we're talking about that kind of do change behavior, and I think that are kind of things to concern about. I think when you said Easy Pass, I think that's unconsciously, and sometimes consciously, why I haven't gotten one, even though I'm always on the highway. Up and down, I still haven't gotten one. Just the idea that every move I make, someone knows where I am.
Well, what do you think about some kind of labeling system like we have on food, or I don't know, so that if you want to use something like Easy Pass or buy a cell phone, you're required to disclose that this technology has these features, it could be used against you, some kind of Miranda warning that goes along with whatever technology
I think
using.
It takes more than a Miranda warning. I think we literally have to be protected from. And I don't think this is paranoid at all, but I think we literally have to be protected from large government and from corporations when it comes to invading our privacy. There have to be firewalls to protect us from that. I mean, I just think that there's how much can they know about you?
This discussion is making me realize that I think Facebook gets a really bad rap from people. I think Facebook comes to mind when the issue of privacy comes up, and everybody's all up in arms about how evil Facebook is. But with Facebook, at least, you actually have a choice of what information you disclose on there. And I feel very, very strongly that people really shouldn't put every bit of information about their lives on Facebook. I'm known as Virtual Linda, and that's really important because there's not everything about me online. I really make a decision with everything that I put online. I will put on professional information, I'll put on personal information, but I won't put on private information. But some of these other technologies that we're talking about, I don't really have that choice. And I think maybe the easy pass and the cameras being everywhere and the tracking with the cell phones are scarier than Facebook, yet people are more worried about Facebook.
Mara, you've been much too quiet down there.
Well, what I was thinking, this is not going to be a popular question to ask, but I was kind of thinking, does this transparency, because that's what the digital age brings, is transparency in so many things. On the positive side of it, does it help us to behave better? So, does it help us to – now, I'm not talking about the government side. I'm not talking about, people try – but – the idea that if and I've had so many people tell me stories about, I put on Facebook that I was going to such and such place, and my, boyfriend or girlfriend or wife or husband got mad. I didn't think they would see it. There's all this kind of,
Right.
Maybe we should be thinking about, does it help us to think more about what we're doing, as human beings? And that was kind of what was going through my mind as I was listening to the caller on. These other things, I think there, I don't know what the answer is. There's a line there, and I don't know how you draw that line.
I think so. Listeners might be thinking about this because a bunch of them calling in to find out or to tell us what they think about that. 410-319-8888. Myra Norton, Mike Sobelski, and Linda Schenk with us as we explore this digital world and what's upon us, and where it's going, and what it says about our lives and how it may change them. And Sinclair, you've been holding on a while. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome.
I'd just like to ask the views of the panel or your guests as to whether this is a public utility or a private service purely for the aim of making profit, or is it as a public utility there to serve the community and the people who live in these communities? And I'm talking really about the internet as a mechanism for exchanging data or for this brave new world that we believe we're entering.
Sinclair, the great question. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
Yeah, man. You owe me a pint.
I hope you're doing well. I do owe you a pint on a lad. I do. I know. It's been too many years. The pint's on me. Just hit me and I'll take you out soon. I hope your kids are well and everybody else in the family.
Wow, you've got a big audience. They all heard that.
Good. It's great to hear you.
Just take it easy now.
Take care. I do know Sinclair. It's been long. I haven't seen him in a long time. But it's no one saying there aren't too many Sinclairs with that kind of thick Scottish accent. It had to be him. Who else could it be? But I think that that's right, though. I mean, the question of public utility or private entity is part of the battle, and the FCC now with net neutrality and everything else, what this is. And we have changed the definition to public utility when it comes to gas and electric, when it comes to, it used to be a public utility, privately run public utility, phones, sewer, water, that is now becoming privately owned across the globe as opposed to being a public asset. Now, what about this question now with our future? There's a future public utility or private concern.
But the public utility implies that there is some kind of geographic or municipal boundary around which you can organize it.
But let me just tell you, but does it though? I mean, because we're talking about, maybe it doesn't, because we're talking about the boundaries around the digital existence is not a boundary like you could make
Exactly. Right. So what I'm saying is, if the internet is a public utility, then who's the Public Works Commission that would regulate it? There really isn't one.
But.
And it's global, so it's not just
It's extra governmental. It's all those things, and it's beyond all those things. It's a hybrid.
That's what I was going to say. It is a hybrid, and I don't know how you separate those things out.
Well, I mean, if you. That has to go. That goes to the heart of access, mm-hmm. of the pipes, of whether the pipes are wireless or whether the pipes are underground or over the ground. That goes to how that's controlled. I mean, is it owned by a private industry? Is it owned by government that control what goes in it and who uses it? Or is that the public utility? And from there, everything else blossoms.
I would hate to see it go one complete way or the other.
Why?
If the government was completely in charge of it, it would still be ARPANET. I mean, it wouldn't be the internet. It wouldn't have grown.
But is the government's not in charge of our highways? They built them. They're a public utility.
But then
they're being sold off in Indiana. They're a public utility for the, or they should be a public utility.
But then there's private companies that make the cars that ride on those highways. And so Facebook is, you know, a private company that utilizes what might be a public utility, but that's still a private company. And maybe you have a choice of whether or not you're going to use it.
Maybe Facebook is more like a private toll road in some say.
Right.
But they don't charge you tolls. They use your information.
Right.
Well,
Myra?
And so in that analogy, you've got, you know, the highway administration that sets the rules for how you behave,
right,
and what you can and cannot,
right,
do on those highways. So is that the model we're talking about here?
So, I mean, I think that's part of this discussion going on now that I think is a really important part of where this is going in the future, whether it's local, national, or international discussion of how this is controlled and who runs it, who owns it, who can manage it, who can see what's going inside of it, how much privacy there is inside of it. Because clearly these are the things that our first caller, Mike, was talking about. I mean, it's here, and it's only going to grow.
You see, here's the problem with that analogy. So a highway in Georgia is not going to have to deal with cars, people in cars in India coming into that. I mean, there is a geographic, right, you know, bound around it. So to your point earlier, Mike, you know, the question is who is there some, you know, global, you know, owner that sets those rules? Because really, it's almost like one highway. It's one highway that has
an information superhighway,
so to speak. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why these choke points have arisen, because there's a lack of control, and someone needs to be coordinating all this stuff. I mean, Mark, it seems like you're concerned that about how do we protect our ourselves from big government using these tools. So what are I don't really know about this world, but I mean, what are the traditional remedies to protect a populace against big government? Maybe we're focused too much on the technology. If you're worried about people, concentration of power and people using it.
I'm worried about technology for other reasons, and because part of my thinking, way of doing things, is to be the skeptic to raise the issues we think we need to be thinking about. Not that I have the answers to how they're supposed to be done. And just because I think I have the answers, they may not be the right answers anyway. But I, you know, but I think there have to be some built-in privacies that we have to make, and I think only our societies can make them. And I think the problem is that, as you see now with the whole question of net neutrality, that the guys who own the access want to call the shots. AT&T, they want to call the shots. Verizon, they want to call the shots. Google now wants to call the shots.
Aren't they putting their money into the system, though?
But the system, not alone, they're not, because this didn't happen without some public money.
It's
true. So they don't call all the shots, and that's like the railroads. America built the railroads, and the private companies put their trains on them. But it was America that built that pipeline, that built that highway. So there's got to be that kind of balance somewhere along the way. And I do worry about. And maybe it's because of where I came from.
Well, that's why I asked.
But I worry about, I mean, I was a victim of the FBI and COINTELPRO back in the early 70s and late 60s. And got me fired from jobs. You know, we're inside my business, tapping my phone. And so, yes, I do worry about what happens when that's not contained. You know, and I think that they have to be contained somehow in this new world. If this new world is going to be the world that is supposed to be the part of a democratic process, part of the world that equalizes us and doesn't allow us to be governed. I think that's the battle of the future. Is this technology going to govern us, or is it going to democratize us?
And the other tricky part is, how is there going to be a global consensus to the answer of that?
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of light between us and a lot of room between us and China on a lot of these issues. So
right now.
Yeah.
Do you want to say something, Myra, before we go to the next caller?
No, let's take the next
410-319-8888. Sabrina, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Sabrina. Welcome.
I've been talking about so many different things. The one topic that I want to reiterate on is Facebook, because you do have to set boundaries, especially I know that I work in healthcare. And a lot of times, some of our employees have to be really reinforced that they cannot be talking about patient care. And a lot of information goes out there, and I have known some people have been fired because Facebook, they've been exposing people information. So it does need to be policed a little bit because some people are not going to be tactful and understand how they can violate people's confidentiality. And not just that, also, one of my other concerns is the when you had to transform over to the digital box.
Mm-hmm.
This is forced on you. I mean, I'm a person who don't watch television. And only when you have company and people come over your house, you try to keep up with technology. And to me, I'm kind of scared of that everyone had to get transformed over to the digital box. What was that for? I mean, it almost seems like they can tap into your TV and find out. I'm paranoid just like you. So, you know,
anytime you
call to another country and they can actually access your computer while you're on the phone, if you give them permission, you don't know what people are capable of doing, just like you said. So we have to be very leery and protective of our rights. So even though we may be forced into some of this stuff, we still have to learn how to protect our private rights as well.
I'd like to know more about the conversations the FBI is having with Google and Facebook about what they want them to do and how they, because they want to be able to deal with encryption to find out what's going on. And then the argument, well, you know, we're facing a world of people who, of terrorists and of that constantly is in the, so it's easy then to use that to kind of infringe on what we can do.
Well, yeah, you would. We're talking. Of course, we would hate to have something like September 11th happen again. I mean, we know our enemies are using this stuff against us, so that just adds another dimension. But I don't know. I guess since our political process seems so broken right now, there really isn't anyone that's going to create these firewalls and protections that we're all talking about. The healthcare example is a really good one. I never thought of that.
That's a great example.
And that must be a total nightmare.
Yeah.
I feel for you. Or your coworkers.
Yeah. I mean, because there's stuff that you can say that you shouldn't be saying. And it's, but also young people. I mean, what they do on Facebook, how open that is, how easy it is to access children. That's another.
Well, I know many parents who don't even think twice about putting information about their kids online. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I saw an article. I think it's like 75% of babies have an online presence. And they haven't asked for that.
75% of babies have an online presence.
Yeah, it might not be that high, but it was well over 50%. And those are babies that didn't make a choice in this, that their parents have just decided that they want to be sharing their baby pictures, and they've made Facebook pages for their children, even though I think you must be 16 to officially have an account, but their parents have decided to put that information out there and not block it.
Oh, middle schoolers in the world that have accounts, though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, people lie and say that they're a certain age, but I mean, I'm more concerned with the parents who do it for preschoolers and, you know, don't even think twice about it.
Oh my God. We'll go back to the phones here. And I'll just say that one thing we didn't get to that I'll get to on another show that really hit me, an article I was reading by this woman, Sarah Greenfield from London, who is a neurologist from Oxford, that the research, there's a circumstantial evidence that links the diagnosis of ADD, attention deficit disorder, and the use of Ritalin over the last 10 years with the rise of technology that kids use.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. There have been all kinds of anthropologists that have looked at how we are, as human beings, are being rewired.
Right.
Because in order to travel on this information superhighway, we have to. And it's scary. And I'll tell you just real quickly,
sure.
One thing that I've had to do personally is, you know, now that you have access to information on your phone, you know, you get email to your phone. I realized I wasn't being present in, you know, I'm at dinner with my husband. I'm in a meeting. I'm having a one-on-one with someone. I'm not there. I'm and so when we talk about how we change behavior, you know, I had to say, I'm not bringing my phone with me into meetings. I'm not bringing my, you know, smartphone with me to dinner or what have you. And so when you think about kids, who are what many folks call digital natives, they don't know anything but this world. They don't know what it is to not have a computer, et cetera. they're suffering this, and they don't even know they're suffering it because they don't know a world other than that. So it's something we got to think about.
And those things, the whole question of how we're being rewired, brains are being rewired, is an hour into itself in this show to talk about, because I think that's a huge issue for us to really wrestle with and get to know. We have to know what we're facing and not just accept that it's going to come.
Yes.
And the others, you're right. I mean, I often take this thing. This phone, I'm holding a phone in my hand. We're not streaming. I'm holding a phone in my hand, and it distracts everything you do. I mean, you're having a conversation, you look down at it. I mean, the new body language is the neck down, and that it's looking down, and it does take you away from where you are. I mean, it's a very rude.
You know, my father said to me once. He said, because I used to have my phone set on vibrate and it would, and he said to me, you need to control the phone and not let it control you. Mm. And I think maybe that's kind of what I would say about technology in general, technology has become so powerful that in a way, if we aren't conscious, if we are not making a conscious choice about how we're evolving, it will control us, and we have an opportunity now to decide that we're going to control it.
This has come to the end of our hour, and Myra Norton, thank you for taking us. It's a pleasure to meet you and have you on our show.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Linda Shen, great to see you. Thank you for joining us here tonight.
Thank you.
And Mike Sobelski, good to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And you can go to steinershow.org and link on to all these folks' accounts and see what they're doing. I mean, in terms of their work. Not their private lives. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered tonight by Brian Boone. Our intern tonight is Shari Barnes. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast, hear the show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, learn about our guests on the web and their lives and their work. Well, you know what I mean. You can go to steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And for Free Speech TV, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.